Our first reading is from the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, verses 6 to 12. Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin. Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorers of the streets to live in.
On this Earth Day Sunday, we celebrate our congregation's commitment to creation care. Our congregation has been a certified Green Faith congregation now for over 5 years, as well as a Presbyterian Church USA Earth Care congregation. And that symbolizes a commitment that we as a community of faith have made, not just to ourselves and to what happens in this building, but what happens to the community and even the planet. And so we have made a commitment as a congregation to think about all of those elements whenever we make decisions about who we are and how we do what we do here, our ministry and our mission together. Our scripture lessons this morning both talk about some different ways of practicing faith. In both the prophet Isaiah and the book of James, people are criticized for practicing their faith in ways that don't benefit the community around them. And both James and Isaiah make it very clear that this is not the kind of worship or practice of faith that God intends. What we say is supposed to match what we do in the world around us. And what we do and say is also supposed to reflect the values of the God we follow. And this is a God that cares deeply for community as well as individual well-being. And so this morning we thought it would be helpful, in conjunction with our Hunger Action Team emphasis in our congregation, to look at some ways that we as a congregation help to live together in community with one another, with our neighbors in our surrounding neighborhood, as well as with the earth, our planet as a whole. And this morning, we are very glad to welcome Teshin Paul Silverman. He is a local community leader, a part of our Yorktown Interfaith Council, and also the director of our Garden of Hope. He's here to share with us some of what the Garden of Hope means to him and how it encourages us and invites us all to put our faith into action in the world around us.
Hello, I'm Paul Teshin Silverman, and thank you so much for inviting me to participate in today's service. I just adore the First Presby family. I think I've made that clear on numerous occasions. I have so much love for all of you guys. I just love spending time with you, so I'm so grateful and honored to be able to join you today. I was asked to talk about the Garden of Hope. As I think many of you know, the Garden of Hope has moved from its original location to this new location here at Willow Park. It's at the corner of Curry and Tulip. I was out here all day yesterday cutting the very first rose that we will be planting in. This is kind of a momentous event, and I'm very excited about the way it turned out. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on. I want to come back to this idea, though, about the Garden of Hope and its meaning. I could do the typical pitch about what the purpose of and why it's important to participate here, but for this occasion, I want to do something different. As I was thinking about the Garden of Hope, two ideas came to mind, which I wanted to share with you. The first was, I remember a number of years ago, I was listening to an interview of a very famous corporate executive, and apparently his family had been in the apple orchard business. And what he said was, his takeaway from all of those years working in the agricultural industry was that God was a really bad business partner. And he specifically said, don't go into business with God, because it often doesn't end well. And I've never forgotten that. It's always stuck with me. The other conversation that came to mind was, a couple years ago, the Garden of Hope kind of fell on hard times. It went through a bad patch, if you will. And as I was discussing with some folks, one person said to me, you know what, the problem is the whole business model for the Garden of Hope is wrong. It's mistaken. If your goal truly is to create and distribute fresh produce to local pantries, this isn't the way to do it. He said, if you do the calculations, it makes much more sense for all of the volunteers to take an additional job if needs be, let's say even a minimum wage job, and take those monies, the hours that would have been spent here, put those hours into an actual job, take that money, and with that money, you'll be able to buy far more produce than you could possibly ever grow and distribute. And I thought a lot about that. There was a certain kind of rationale to that, and it may or may not have been true. My comeback is this, as I think about these comments. The first is, the Garden of Hope is not just one thing. I don't think it ever has been. The Garden of Hope is many things to many people. For some people, it's a place where you come to get your merit badges. For other folks, it's a place to come and just hang out and relax and enjoy the sunshine. For some folks, it's a place to come and hone your gardening tips and to meet with other gardeners and to learn more. For some folks, it's a place to come and live and practice your morals and your values and your ethics. Like I said, it's many things for many people. On a personal note, I just want to share two quick things with you. One is this. When I think about the garden in terms of heritage and tradition, particularly vis-a-vis our spiritual traditions, I can't help but think about the Bible. And the very first and arguably the most famous garden of all, the Garden of Eden. Now, I will leave it to the extraordinary spiritual leaders of First Presby to explain to all of us why we no longer live in the Garden of Eden. That's above my pay grade. I can't do that. But I do know that in many Abrahamic traditions, the idea of returning to the Garden of Eden plays a very strong role. This idea of returning to a place in which we are in perfect communion, perfect harmony with not only the Creator, but all of creation. It's an important concept. I know in our Jewish brothers and sisters call this tikkun olam, repairing the world. Part of our job with our life is to take the blessings we receive, our body, our mind, our intellect, our intuition, to use all of these blessings to somehow repair the world, make it a bit more perfect so that we can return to the Garden of Eden. In my Zen tradition, we have a teaching that says you can find one's true nature in chopping wood and carrying water. Sometimes, to be honest, I would prefer if it said enlightenment could be found in Netflix and chill, but it doesn't say that. It talks about carrying water and chopping wood. So we know from all these teachings that to apply ourselves physically to the world as it is a way to bring life, to bring breath, to invigorate and animate our spiritual teachings. In other words, it's a place of spiritual practice for many of us. The other concept I want to share with you is this. In my years of being involved with the Garden of Hope, I have to tell you, I have met and become friends with people that I arguably would never have met, no matter how many years I lived in Yorktown. There are folks here that I share very little in common with. Our lifestyle, our politics, our the circles we run in, we just never would have really become friends. But the Garden of Hope has been a place where all these different groups have come together and with a shared value have become friends, have become a community. This is a very special thing. I have to tell you, whenever I come into the garden, and I see three generations gardening side by side, it brings a huge smile to my face. Where do we ever find that anymore? Where you get three generations of neighbors, of family and friends coming together, not just for our own personal needs and desires, but also because of a shared value. You know, it's a big conversation these days, as you all know, about how do we bring our community back together again? How do we bring our country back together again? How do we bring the world back together again? And I know there's a number of people that believe in the idea of think globally, act locally. Well, if that's the case, this is a perfect example where we can locally bring the concepts of community building to fruition. We can actually walk the talk and actually practice what we preach. So this is a really important, if you will, template or role model for how we could possibly move forward in terms of building a healthier community, not based on individual needs and wants and desires, but on shared values. So just taking those two concepts into consideration of how to rebuild community and what it means for us to have a place where we can do our spiritual practice. If you take those concepts into consideration, I think the true meaning and the true value of the Garden of Hope starts to reveal itself. It's not so simplistic as to provide fresh produce for the pantry, which of course is our end goal, but I think it has a lot more to it than that. So I want to conclude here with one last idea, and that's this. It was a great prophet who once said, "Build it and they will come." Now, again, to be perfectly honest, I'm not so sure that James Earl Jones in the Field of Dreams was a prophet, but he certainly sounded like one, and to me, that's good enough. So I say that because last year when we were discussing about the design for the next Garden of Hope, someone from First Presby, who will remain nameless, said to me, "Paul, the whole row idea is great, but what if we had squares? I think we should have some squares, because there are certain things we can grow in squares and we can't grow in rows." I heard you. So when I was out here cutting everything up yesterday, I remembered that. So I want to show you a very special plot that I have plowed under just for First Presby. All right, here it is. As you can see, it's not a square. It is a big old rectangle. It's multiple squares right next to each other. And this is essentially an invitation to all of you, not only to take the number of rows you typically take, but to think outside of the box, bring extra creativity, extra energy, extra whatever it takes to turn this plot into whatever you can possibly dream it can be. So it's out here now, it's waiting for you, and I can't wait to get on the ground, get our hands dirty together, and really make something spectacular with this of God's blessings. Thank you so much. See you soon.